is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Tuesday, September 13th, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for today as we have a discussion focused on what is a Bahamian, whose country is this anyway, and whose benefit the assets and resources should be around. I want to have a conversation about who we are as a people, right? Moving forward, what is it we're trying to define ourselves as, right? And in order to have that discussion, I brought in the Guardian's very own social analyst, right? A social commentator, a human, what would you call that? Aaron, what would you describe yourself as again?
A intersectional human rights advocate.
Humans right, I'm not sure that intersectional, anyway, humans right advocate, right? In order to shape this discussion, right? Because I think we need to define ourselves as a people, or what people see us as and what we see ourselves as, right? I want to know, Aaron, from your opinion, right? And thanks very much for agreeing to join in on the show, by the way.
Yeah.
I wanted to know, is it important to define what is a Bahamian? Right? I'm going to set up the whole conversation because this conversation started for a reason for me, right? I went to the swearing in or the agreement for King Charles III, right? And I join in with the...
Like a wedding ceremony. You say your part.
I join in. I said, I swear my allegiance to the new king.
Mm-hmm.
Of the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
And when starting that, it didn't feel right coming out of my lips. The new king of the Bahamas, right? And I said, but this is who we are, right? We have a king.
Mm-hmm.
Then I shout out three cheers for the king of the Bahamas. I say, hurrah, hurrah, hurrah. And I felt a little odd for saying that. I listened to the 21-gun salute. And then this is what changed me, made my stomach kind of uneasy. When I join in and sing in the national anthem of United Kingdom, which is God Save the King.
Mm-hmm.
And then it followed with the Bahamas national anthem, Lift Up Your Heads, right? And I'm trying to say, is this what being a Bahamian is about? And I want you to join in, but this is where, before that, something happened to me before that, right? As I walked from Cumberland Street, right, toward Rawson Square.
Mm-hmm.
There was unlimited stores that were open because it was Sunday,
uh-huh.
Right? And, you know, that Bay Street is slow. There was no cruise ship, or limited cruise ship, I should say. I think there's one in. There's limited cruise ships in. But I saw about 12 stores open. And amongst that 12 stores that were open, six of them had... For lack of a better word, because I didn't identify their ethnicity. They looked either Indian or Pakistani or Arabian persons managing the store were the staff of the store. And I said, what we anticipate the Bahamas is about? Who owns our tourism product? Are they a part of our tourism narrative? Is this the new Bahamas that we must share our tourism product with? Or is this a problem? Right? Should Bahamian tourism be about Bahamians or these new Bahamians? Because I can assume that they have some type of Bahamian citizenship, some kind of resident card, and that because of that, they have a right to be on Bay Street,
to be selling t-shirts, because someone's selling makeup, someone's selling jewelry. Retail businesses, I thought, should have been only for Bahamians. And this is where I want you to come in, because I want to identify what is Bahamian and what is the, and whatever the Bahamian is it important to be defined? So you go ahead now.
Oh boy, that's a whole lot. But for me, the conversation, the questions arose around the same event, the passing of the Queen, and then in particular, the proclamation of the new king, and how that took place. Of course, it's important for us to maybe not identify with certainty what is or isn't a Bahamian, but to maintain a constant conversation about the scope, right? I don't want to say the boundaries or the limitations, right? But the scope of what it means to be Bahamian. It can't be an exhaustive list, right? But it can't be limited to my experience in 2022, Bahamian born in 1976, like our friend John Boswick II likes to say, a born free Bahamian, right? It can't be limited to that. It can't be limited to those people that watched or even participated in the birth of the new independent nation, our pre-independence Bahamians, or it can't be only a pre-majority rule Bahamians, but also cannot only be post-1992, post-2022 Bahamians either, right? What it means to be Bahamian is a constantly evolving conversation, not a definition.
And that's exactly why I brought you on and invited you on, because of how you define things. You encompass so many other groups in order to be a wholesome Bahamian. And whereas there are people who would say none of those people you included in that is truly Bahamian, because there's such a thing as a true Bahamian. There's such a thing as an organic Bahamian.
So I've been hearing, right? I've been hearing people use this term organic Bahamian. I wish I had the definition that they gave, because I don't want
people... Something with grandparents. If your grandparents, the two grandparents are not Bahamian, you cannot be organic.
Well, they were saying is, to be an organic Bahamian, you have to have an organic Bahamian parent.
Grandparent, not parent. Grandparent.
Right?
You have to get a second generation.
And that's fascinating for academic purposes, right? Because there's no person of African descent, modern descent, right, that is indigenous to the Bahamas, what would be indigenous the Indians, right? Now, whether they had darker skin or lighter skin is another question. Mm-hmm. Whether they look like us or didn't look like us is another question, right? But those are the people that are truly indigenous to this place. Now,
go ahead.
Modern academia will tell us that there's a new category of indigeneity. Like a thing has been in a place so long,
yes,
and its inability to return to its place of origin renders it indigenous to this place. So it's fair to say that the descendants of slaves, right, are indigenous to this place. Those that were brought here with no route of return are indigenous at 400 years later.
So where would that leave Anglo-Bahamians, white Bahamians? Because it looked like you just separated.
Now remember, the Anglo-Bahamians came here before the enslaved people would have been brought here. Mm-hmm. I think our first settlers are the
Lutheran adventurers from Bermuda.
Right, they were fleeing Britain and religious persecution. They were Europeans. Now, they weren't technically considered white, because whiteness is a category that was constructed like around the time that they came, but shortly after. Mm-hmm. The loyalists who came and met them here then created a hierarchy of power, right? Yes. And called them conks, because they were conking and their skin was darker because of the activities that they had to engage in this new place, right?
So I hear you. And are you going to say that the conks, or the descendants of conks, are organic Bahamian also?
Well, here's what I'm going to say. Remember when we had this massive conversation, one of the Holowesko family members, and I don't think Holowesko is the last name that they used, right?
No, they used their original name from Harbor Island, Pyframs.
Right, but so I think it was a Holowesko.
She married a Holowesko.
Right. She identified as 12th generation Bahamian. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. If you could trace your lineage back in these islands 12 generations, that's fine. It's a bit tone deaf, right?
Tone deaf?
Yeah. It's like you didn't read the room. Like you didn't realize that there are other peoples, ethnic groups who have been here possibly as long as you, maybe, you know, not as long, maybe as long, but they are unable to prove that. Mm. They are unable to document that. That doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, right? So there's nothing wrong with Bahamians of European descent saying, I've been here for 12 generations, right? Nothing wrong with that. But then you remember that there are some of us of African descent or African ethnicities who have been here almost as long as you, if not as long as you, and we can't claim it in the same way.
And when you say claim and can't claim, is it because there's no records to prove what is being said?
Because there's no records to prove or no records to prove when and how your people, exactly how your people got here, what date they got here. You could trace your family back to the Eleuthrian Adventurers. You know you were part of that original lot. You can trace your family back to any of the boat arrivals, right? Between now and then, you could prove that you're part of that lot. But it's a different process or a more difficult process for those who are the descendants of slaves. That's why I say it's a bit tone deaf, right?
Okay. I don't want to interject and rob you of your point.
No.
There are some Bahamians who say that the Bahamian identity is at risk, is threatened. That we need to define who we are as being Bahamian because of a large ethnic grouping that is here and has permeated what it is in the Bahamas. That we are actually gradually changing who we are. And because we are changing, we need to be more defensive. We need to be more circumspect of who we allow to become Bahamian in the near future.
And so I would say, okay, all of that is true. But no, we don't have to become more defensive. We have to become more intentional, right? We have to become more focused and committed in preserving our culture. A couple of weeks ago, I had the chance to respond to a texter and ask them if they know with certainty if their parents or their ancestors, their great-grandparents, had the same attitudes around migration that A, we hold today, and B, we ascribe to them, right? Like we assume that they believe the same things that we did. And so if we're going to talk about it, you know, let's talk about our concern about Haitian migration and Haitian ethnic mixing and a loss of Bahamian culture, right? Or Bahamian identity. Well, Haitian migration into the Bahamas could diminish Bahamian culture or destroy it or erase it. Only our lack of attention to it could do that.
So, mind you, they have, again, and I brought you in as a social commentator and social scientist. That's the word I want, right? There are some social scientists who said that we, because of our proximity to the United States, because of the nature of who we are in terms of assimilation, that we are changing the narrative of what is the Bahamas, right? Once upon a time, we knew what was the national dish of the Bahamas. There's no such thing anymore.
Right. And if I could just jump in, I would argue that Northern cultural imperialism, right, or global cultural imperialism, global North cultural imperialism is far more dangerous to us, small island Bahamas, than any Haitian migration or this perception of culture overload, right? Or
explain that to me. I understand your point, but explain that to me.
Okay, so ontological Americanness.
I like that.
That's Dr. Keith Russell from Grand Bahama coined the term ontological whiteness.
Okay.
Right? But ontological Americanness is when you're so consumed by American systems, American language, American culture, American values, American commercialism and things, right? Did you forget that you're not American? You forget that that's not you. That's not your culture. That's not what you belong to.
But we have Bahamian rap and Bahamian reggae.
We do have Bahamian rap, and that's not necessarily it. When you hear Johnny Cage and his song about Florida, that's a Bahamian. That's a Bahamian, and that's a song about a Bahamian experience in Florida. And it's a song that tells, that shows you where, not just where Bahamians are located in Florida, but where Florida is located in Bahamians. Here's an example of what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Almost 10 years ago now, we were selling mango lemonade at Agribusiness Expo or the Gladstone Road Farmers Market.
Yes.
And a young lady, a very young girl, 13 years old roughly, came up to the booth. I want, you know, can I have some mango lemonade? But I ain't sure what it tastes like. So we gave her a sample. And she screwed up her face. Now, look here. These are the finest hairy mangoes from Johnson Road and Fox Hill. Mm-hmm. Teethed from the most unkempt yards, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you know they're good. Mm-hmm. And she screwed up her face and sucked her teeth. And I just politely, I said, well, what happened? What does it taste like? She said, well, I mean, it don't taste right. So I asked her, well, what tastes right? She said, you know Snapple, mango drink? Mm. That's what mango is supposed to taste like. I almost fell out.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't because it's a young child.
Concept,
right?
A foreign concept of what is natural.
Snapple, I mean, the drink company, a drink, an imported drink is what defines mango flavor for her. That's the standard. She wasn't even aware that we don't grow the type of mango that they use for that product in our country. In fact, the geographic location doesn't produce those flavors in the mango. Even if you got that same mango, it would taste different because of the limestone and how it grows here. You know, that's cultural imperialism at work. When the police pull you over and you say, well, you officer, you ain't read me my rights. That's cultural imperialism. We don't have Miranda rights here. The Bahamian police supposed to look at you. I will lock you and Miranda up.
Mm. And before I have you comment again on organic Bahamian
mm-hmm.
and this new drumming of this is what Bahamians should be about and
yeah.
and crying that Bahamians need a fair shot. I want to just read this text right here, right?
Uh-huh.
Says, only Caucasian Bahamians use phrases like 12th generation Bahamians to try say that they have more rights than anyone else. Is that the reason why you think that people mentioned 12th generation Bahamians, 11th generation Bahamian to establish their Bahamianicity as more than someone else?
And in sometimes.
Sometimes.
Right.
But then again, there are black Bahamians who don't see white Bahamians as being Bahamians. They are always as tourists.
Right. This is a part of it. And so you then change perspective. You put yourself in the shoes of a Bahamian of European descent who may not identify as white even. And you can understand that, right? In many instances. You phenotypically white, that doesn't mean you're white, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can understand being a minority, constantly talking about a black majority country, a black nation. You got people like Aaron Green on the radio all the time, bigging up the decade of people of African descent. And then you think to yourself, but, you know, I am descended from the original inhabitants after the European genocide, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've been here a long time. These people is mine, but I never get to sing the song in the same way as everybody else gets to sing it.
I'm going to ask you a controversial question.
Yeah, yeah.
Can Bahamians of Haitian extract descendants, right? Can they be true Bahamians?
I mean, let's ask. I'm going to say something equally as controversial, right? Mm-hmm. But let's ask the historians if. When we learned about, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe this is just one of those historical rumors, right? But we learned that parts of Long Island was settled by Haitian mulattoes who fled the revolution.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, can they be true Bahamians?
But, and if you follow in stories and oral stories about Long Island,
right?
They're saying, some would say there are no Haitian descendants in Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's a narrative that goes with it, that the mulattoes, the Haitian mulattoes were so prominent and caused so much controversy that the narrative that there are no Haitians in Long Island started from there. They were expelled out of Long Island.
As well.
And that's where the narrative comes. So, well,
right, because you see, I would believe that if I were a mulatto fleeing the Haitian Revolution, then it is a couple of things. First of all, y'all don't need to know we Haitian.
No.
First of all. Ain't nobody, we gonna forget that.
Mm-hmm.
Right, for many reasons, not because I'm ashamed of being Haitian, but I'm concerned about being slaughtered. I'm concerned about being killed.
Remember, these were the educated people.
Right, but they still fled.
Mm-hmm.
right? And they knew why they fled.
Yes.
So I ain't mad at you if you're scared.
Mm-hmm.
And so you try to erase that, right? Mm-hmm. History. Which is, you know, I could believe that. At the same time, I could believe them saying that they expelled the Haitians from Long Island. But I have a feeling that it's a culture that developed out of fear that what was visited on the mulattoes in Haiti would eventually be visited on us in the Bahamas now, right? But how could you say that Bahamian and Haitian are exclusive?
Hmm.
I mean, the proximity. It's the same conversation. See, we'd be much more comfortable having this conversation about our friends to the global north, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I say, how could you extract the Bahamian experience from the U.S. experience? What is modern popular culture? What is hip-hop? What is pop culture,
mm-hmm.
right? What is Whitney Houston singing? What is Nicki Minaj and Rihanna singing if not for the contributions of Bahamians consistently from Joseph Spence and Frederick McQueen straight up to a Julian Believe, right? Mm-hmm. Straight up. Because Julian, I mean, however you feel about his music, Julian is in the U.S. music space influencing it, right? Tony, we zoom past Tony McKay and T-Connection, right? We zoom past all of them. But we don't say that as comfortably. In fact, we know that we have tensions with parts of the Greek community in Bahamian communities.
Yeah.
We know that we have these tensions, right? We don't have the same attitude towards them as we do Haitians. But at the same time, we find it hard to acknowledge that they devised the crack conk recipe.
Yes.
Right? We just claim crack conk as our own.
I don't. So, but I'll go with this. Let me ask you another controversial question.
Yeah.
Can Haitian Bahamians of Haitian descent, be more Bahamian than Bahamians? And I say that for a reason, right? I know you frequent Morning Q Dock mm-hmm. to buy your fish, whatever it is. And I know you go by sometimes less regularly Port of Ski Dock.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go on Port of Ski Dock and say you want to buy fruits and vegetables, if you want to go buy what do you call it, a dry conch.
Yeah.
If you want to go buy crab, if you want to go buy tomatoes.
You gotta find a Haitian vendor.
You gotta find a Haitian vendor.
Yeah. Right?
So it seems as if they are protecting this Bahamianism or this culture of bygone, right?
Mm-hmm.
They are living that era, what we would identify that's true Bahamian.
Now, and look here, this is the most fascinating space right here because you're right, right?
If you go into the junk new shacks, especially off McCullough Corner, the drums, the tum-tum drums are being beat by a particular group of black people, and they have a Creole tongue.
Right? And it makes me think, okay, so we can't just dismiss the conversation about quote-unquote organic Bahamian. It requires us to delve into it and find out exactly what's happening. Because like you say, how could they not be Bahamian if they are the keepers of the culture? If they're the ones, people like Aaron Green has come on the radio and talk about the things I know we should be doing, the things that I'm grateful that I have an opportunity to participate in, but we never recognize the people who are doing it. Not because they're keepers of the culture, but because this is what they do. This is how their life operates, right? We get the conch and we dry it. We making the hurricane ham, right? We bringing the produce in. We making sure that the children could eat bananas because we selling bananas at the best price, right? And I asked the question, but for the Haitian vendor, how much fresh fruit would there be in the market? Do Bahamians even understand how to maintain a market anymore? Do they understand how to price produce, right? In fact, we live in a place where beans cost more than meat.
What?
Beans. We live in a place where beans per pound cost more than meat.
Interesting.
But everywhere you go in the world, poor people is eat beans because they're cheaper than meat, right? But you know who understands agriculture and how to grow and sell so poor people could eat? Haitian communities understand it. And they're keeping some of these spaces alive. And go on.
And I wanted to ask another question. Again, juxtaposing this organic behemoth and we're trying to define and explain and appreciate that mm-hmm. term. I wanted to compare it to behemoth citizenship, right? What trumps what? I know behemoth citizenship is written in law, right? Mm-hmm. This is who we are as what a behemoth is. And I want to know, is having a behemoth citizenship more important, more have more value than this term organic behemoth?
Well, this is, look here, this is a tricky one because I think politically, like legally, politically and socially, when you start moving up, right, mm-hmm. it is very important. But I think on a day-to-day basis, how you eat, what you eat, how you move, how you engage, is what people use to determine whether you use a behemoth or not, right? It ain't the papers, how you interact, mm-hmm. how you move through, how you live with us, that indicates it. But then, at the same time, though, you know, like before, the government made you be accessible to young Bahamians in waiting, mm-hmm. to stateless Bahamians, right? That was a defining moment, right? That passport was vitally important. Mm. You know, you couldn't...
But even 73, being Bahamian was defined. The idea was pursuing nationhood was important to us as a people.
It was. I don't know what happened because it doesn't seem so anymore. Or if it does, it only... The conversation is just exclusionary, mm-hmm. right? It's only about who isn't a Bahamian and who doesn't get to benefit.
Yes, that seems to be the conversation now.
To the exclusion of what is there to benefit from and how do we extract value, right? Like that conversation is mute, M-U-T-E, not M-O-O-T. Mm-hmm. It's silent, but we just focus on who doesn't get to play. But in the meantime, we have nothing to play with because the people who you're excluding from the conversation are the people who are extracting the value,
yes.
that you want to benefit from.
Yeah. So I see I have a caller here. I'm producer Pastor calling through. I'm speaking with Aaron Green, right, who's a social scientist who I know personally, who defines who we are and analyze who we are as a people. And we're having a conversation on what is being a Bahamian. Who is the Bahamas for? Should we share our commonwealth? And who in the Bahamas should we cherish? But go ahead, producer. Patch the caller through. How you doing, caller? Welcome to Guardian Radio and AM.
Oh, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Okay. I forgot your name. You're Miss Nuri.
I'm Nuri. Yes, Nuri. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I was almost thinking this was Miss Green show.
It blends in. It does blend in. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Yes, I am in agreement with you 1,000% if that exists. You know, there should be something, there should be what is known as an organic Bahamian. I'm listening to Miss Green, and I mean, it's like, wow, it's outrageous, and a lot of the statements that are coming forth is detrimental to the further development of this country. We must have an identity as Bahamians. If the Haitian can say, hey, I'm Haitian, if the Jamaican can say, I'm Jamaican, and identify with their culture, and they can be known as an indigenous Jamaican or an indigenous Haitian, why is it a problem that the indigenous Bahamian cannot exist? Now, I heard her make that's one point. Uh-huh. I heard her also say something about, if a mass grouping of Haitians come here, like let's say the Bahamas has, what, a population of about over 455,000 persons. So if she's suggesting that if 500,000 persons were to come, or 500,000 were to come in the Bahamas, it wouldn't affect it. Everything will be fine. There'll be no cultural changes. We'll moving right along, business as usual. Then that's ridiculous. It's impossible. People are going to bring their problems, their stress, their cultural differences, And you're right, Mr. Nuri, we will have no more culture that is indigenous to Bahamian people.
And ma'am, I want to ask you a question. I want to know, what do you say, and Aaron wants to respond to, I want to know, what do you think, or what is your opinion as an organic Bahamian? I want to get a definition of organic Bahamian, please.
Okay, so an organic Bahamian to me, this is my view. Okay, I agree with Ms. Graham, and she says, yes, we all came from slavery across the Atlantic slave trade ship, right? We did. We crossed the Atlantic, and all of us were deposited on different colonies along the way. Montserrat, Barbuda, Jamaica, Haiti, the Americas. Okay, so we had no identity then. Well, we had it in Africa, but after that, then it was lost. So now, when each of these persons deposited on the various different colonies, right? When the individual islands, countries, what have you, would have obtained the individual independence, okay, and became identified and assigned and associated with that particular place, then that place identifies them. So, if you're as a Bahamian, we were deposited here, our grandparents, our forefathers, right? They were here when the slave trade came, and then after we gained our independence, obviously, they were always identifying with this place here. So let's say, okay, Haiti gained its independence in when? About 1804, somewhere around there? Somewhere around 1804. If you were there in Haiti, let's say I was there in Haiti, and at that time when they gained their independence, so I became identified as a citizen of that country under their independence. Because, you have to create your policies and your rules in order for you to be able to, you know, live sensibly in the world, in life. You have to have something to guide you by. If I would have immigrated from Haiti and come here in the Bahamas illegally, now I already have my passport saying I'm a Haitian citizen, but I came in the Bahamas. Bahamas ain't get its independence yet now. It ain't 1973. And I migrated here. I have my children here. At the point, too, when the Bahamas would have obtained its independence, I was already identifying with another country. I am still Haitian. I am still Haitian. You see what I'm saying? So I cannot come here in the Bahamas and say, okay, now, I'm now Bahamian because of what the economic situation in Haiti is bad. So, you know, I'm going to just pretend like, let's forget about that country. So you know, I'm going to identify with this one
I
now.
I see where you're
trying. Here now. You see, and I want to live better and benefit. You know, don't go like that.
Okay,
no.
Now, let's let Aaron respond to that, because I see your point. You're saying that because whoever the immigrants were had identity before us, from the 73, and that identity post-73 is what you call. So thank you very much for calling. I'll let Aaron engage you right now. Thanks.
Okay.
Again. Okay. So, Aaron, go ahead.
This is cool. I got the sense that, we're talking about a political definition of nationhood and culture, you know? Mm-hmm. It seems something that is defined in 1973.
So that's what I got. I got that Bahamas and Bahamianism started in 1973 from the caller. That's what I interpreted.
Because people who were here and all were identified as British subjects living in the Bahamas, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody had an opportunity to become Bahamian if they wanted.
Yes.
No matter what their passport said.
Yes.
Right? So why would Haitians be excluded? Why would they be treated differently in that moment?
One thing I want to ask you about, the names such like Maynard and Pinglin, you know, they came in between. For by her definition, they are not Bahamians. They can never be Bahamians no matter what.
I mean,
By her definition, right. They can never be Bahamians.
Right, and that means I can't be a Bahamian.
No,
I don't know.
I can go in detail about your lineage shortly. So I'm not even clear. I'm just saying that the father of a nation, according to the caller, cannot
be Bahamian by that definition,
even though they are father of the nation. I found that interesting,
and so I find that a little bit problematic, which is why I said that we have to look at the scope of what it could be and not what it can't be, because in that moment, you've excluded essentially everybody before 1973.
Yeah. But Aaron, I have another call and I want to engage the caller. Right. But I'll let you finish. Go ahead.
Just very quickly. We all came from Africa. And then she said, you know, and then we forgot all of that, mm-hmm. you know, and so now we come into a new dispensation. Do you know that rice has been growing in Africa for thousands of years?
Yes.
And we sit here in the Bahamas and we have wonderful Chinese culture, Chinese Bahamians here for hundreds of years. And we eat a lot of rice mm-hmm. in the Bahamas. I know a lot of people don't have any idea what rice is about. Mm-hmm. And we think it's a foreign thing. It's Chinese, you know, and mm-hmm. and that's why we eat it. African cultures have been growing rice for thousands of years. Rice mm-hmm. is an inherent part of our African dispensation, right? Like, but we would sit here and say that, oh, no, we forgot everything that came with us from Africa. And here we are eating Chinese food, like, because rice is Chinese food. Only mm-hmm. Chinese people eat and grow rice. Africans been growing rice, and it's something that is obviously still inherent in us, in our genetic code. We like rice because mm-hmm. Africans just grow it.
So let me go to this caller. Producer Patrick, call it through so we can have so they can join in the conversation. Go ahead, caller.
Good morning, CA and Aaron.
Good morning.
Do any of you all know when Miami was white and mostly black?
Miami, the city, or you're talking about the entire
Miami,
Florida?
The whole Miami as a whole.
And we know the narrative of Miami and Bahamians moving there, and then they had the Cubans, and they had the Haitians.
And now they've just created a little Nassau, a little Bahamas.
But they allowed so much Cubans in that there'll never be a black mayor again. Everything is run by the Cubans.
But I want to engage you, caller. Do you know when the state of Florida was owned only by Spain? And then, of course, a change. That's the Spanish were there initially first. So it's just because we go and cite this history. I just want to put that inside the narrative, that the whole of Florida was Spanish at one time.
Yeah, but when Henry Flagler built a train track, the Bahamians came and built it, but we assimilated to the culture. Like when he had five brothers went on the contract, and his children became black Americans. But it's like we learned the American way. It's like we didn't carry the Bahamian. We know we're Bahamian, but we're of Bahamian descent.
It's not the American way. It's the imperialist way. What you'll notice is when the Christian church, when the church goes into, we call it indigenous spaces, right? They don't just supplant Christianity in the place. They don't replace what was there with Christianity. They say, oh, y'all just do this thing around this time. Oh, y'all just do this thing around with the time we call Easter, because y'all have this indigenous calendar, and that's the time of renewal. So we can put that thing right here when y'all celebrate your thing, and we can put one on top of the other. That's how they do it.
Aaron.
That's how we do it. We assimilate.
Aaron,
yeah.
Aaron, now the Cubans do not learn English no more. Everything's in Spanish. Signs. The television station, like, they made it easier for them not to learn English, because there's so much of them, and all of my family and friends have to go up north to get a good job. They cannot stay in Miami. It must be.
Are they Bahamians or are they Americans?
Pardon me?
Are they Bahamians? Your friends who have to travel up north?
Yeah, they are Americans. Some of them are my parents born in this part of the States, but most of them are educated. They get good jobs. They cannot live in Miami.
No, I mean, they could live in Miami. They just don't want to.
No. For you to get a good job, you gotta stay in Miami. You want to be bilingual and possibly even look like them.
So all you have to do is learn Spanish?
No.
And did you know that there are dark-skinned Spanish people all over the world?
They are treated bad. They got Afro-Cuban.
But caller.
Afro-Cuban are treated bad.
Caller, let me respond. Let me respond. Spanish people look like Cecil Nuri all over the world.
I know, and they are
dark skinned. They look like Bahamians.
Why you think
caller, you're not letting me respond. The point that you're making is not really a point, because you could learn to speak Spanish, and the idea that the Bahamians, Africans, black people, white people don't look like Spanish people. Spanish is not a race.
I have lived amongst the Cuban white Spanish. They are probably worse than the white people. They are very prejudiced. I lived this. I ask you this, why do you think they left Cuba? Mostly in Cuba now is the Afro-Cubans.
This is a race issue. This is not a migration issue.
Listen, the man in Cuba, he was a black Afro-Cuban, and they made him not be president because he was too black. Now, in the Cuban world, Afro-Cubans, they're like the Brazilians. Brazilians, Afro-Brazilians are treated bad because of their skin. They can speak Portuguese.
Yeah, man. Okay, that's good. That's a good point. It's about race.
We are not learn to speak English. We have a system test to be a Bahamian. You must learn English.
So let me have a conversation with that caller. But I have to take a break right now. We're going to take a short break. It's at 45 minutes now. Producer, let's go on that break. But I want to talk about, when I'm on the next side, I want to talk about citizenship and how to take a test and stuff like that. And caller, I see you on who's holding. So right after the break, we'll go there.
Remember when Zoom was just a sound effect? When your living room wasn't your gym? When a cough didn't scare people away? That was the good old days. And thankfully, they are coming back. As things return to normal, remember it is essential to be fully immunized against all vaccine-preventable diseases like COVID-19, diphtheria, tetanus, measles, and influenza. This message is brought to you by PAHO WHO, the Ministry of Health and Wellness, the Caribbean Development Bank, the Government of Canada, and the United States of America.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri, and I have my guest host today, Erin. Why are you calling you Mitchell today? I'm going back to your lineage.
That's part of my family.
You're going back to your lineage, Erin Green, right? And I wanted to throw in two things. One, Erin family has been in the Bahamas from 1783, right? I would say that she's a true Bahamian just from lineage. She can trace herself by name, each mother, father, up to 1783. But her lineage is also mixed up with Caribbean people, right? And I'm saying, surely you're not an organic Bahamian. You're something different. You like a buy-off. Even though you've been inside the Bahamas longer than most people, you can prove who your daddy is. You know who your people is.
Yeah.
Where most Bahamians ain't sure who their daddy is, right? Mm-hmm. But they won't consider you an organic Bahamian by definition.
No, them said won't. And I, in on this particular matter, I can understand, right? Like I could sense where it's rooted, right? Because, you know, without having sat down and formulated the specific language for the purposes of writing my book, I think we can see clearly why people are frustrated, what it is that they're looking at, right? When they are using these terms, organic Bahamians. Bahamians feel like they are being shut out of their own country. They're not being shut out of their own country. That's obvious, right? Ain't nobody putting you on a boat. Ain't nobody forcing you out. What it does appear, though, is that Bahamians are being sort of marginalized or pushed out of the political process. Not just OISF and MISA PLP, but the politics of governance. They're being pushed out of the decision-making of governance, right? And they're identifying something that is, I think, real, but they're ascribing incorrectly, blame incorrectly, right? I think we do have a political class here. And I think that people are concerned about people like me, right? Who have Caribbean lineage. At 1783, I've been here a long time,
long time.
But also have Caribbean lineage. And it's sort of raised, I see it most prominently, not in these other discussions that other advocates are pointing out, but I see it most prominently in the discussion about the monarchy, right? And over the last few days, you realize, or I've realized, that the people with the greatest concern about the monarchy, the conversations about the monarchy, the treatment of the queen, and the king are those that have a greater proximity to the monarchy, to the queen, and to those systems of governance, right? That's it, a greater proximity to it. I went to Britain. I went to school in Britain. I went to boarding school. I went to university. I know keeping up appearances with Mrs. Bucket, who always pretends to be Mrs. Bouquet. She's also pretending her proximity to the queen, to royalty, to the upper mucks, right? in this conversation, those that are most concerned about the crown, right, and our respect for it, are those with a greater proximity to it. And those with a greater proximity to it are also, I'm not saying those people are also the people whose some of their family members would have migrated here. Like my grandfather, my maternal grandfather had every job. Mm-hmm. This boy was the hardest. That's why I can't wait now. It is a quota, and the Mitchells have not fulfilled. We haven't let the quota run out yet. He had every single job. But that's because of his proximity to the Crown and Turks. Mm-hmm. When he came here, he got all them jobs, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you look at the political class and you look at some of the names that you call off, right, these are people with, multiple heritages. Yes. Nationalities, Bahamian and Trinidadian, Bahamian and Jamaican, Bahamian and Bajan.
And we see our political classes mixed up with these Caribbean people straight throughout.
Right? They're concerned because their lives are intertwined, right? Their grandparents worked for, their great-grandparents worked for, right? We went to the top schools. We learned these things. The grouping that we're calling, that some people are calling the organic Bahamian, when I look at them, they're also people with less proximity to the queen and the crown. They don't care about the queen. I'm talking about older Bahamians as well, Oh, the queen dead, okay, well, God bless the dead. Can we move on with our lives, please? They're not disrespecting her, but they're just not holding any place for her in their lives because she held no place in their lives traditionally, right? And so, like I say, I see this thing when you use the term organic Bahamian, I see it when we talk about this conversation about the crown and why we're paying so much attention to it. Who is concerned and why do they care? The people who have the greatest proximity to the crown, to the political class, they care. And other people don't.
Even though I have some more texts about how Jamaican have defined their culture and reggae and their accent, I wanted to ask you this because we're running out of time, right?
Yeah.
There is a movement now to talking about the Bahamas needs to become a republic, right?
Yeah.
And through this republican system, I see that Bahamians want to identify or distinguish themselves from other groups that they want to be independent of, right? Independent of the crown. But recently, we see the debate that the Bahamas will not be a republic anytime soon, just by the nature of who we are as a people, by the nature of the laws, and also by nature of where do we see ourselves as a republic. We want a federal system, whereas the Caribbean has adopted a Westminster
republic. Yes. Yeah.
And that's not necessarily what we want in the Bahamas.
Well, I don't know.
So we have some years of debate before we even consider becoming a republic.
I mean, there's so much to talk about now. And this is one of those places where it's not about defining who you don't want to be. It's about defining who you want to be.
Yes.
To make this decision, we have to define who we want to be. And we have the power to do that, right, and to move forward. But it's going to take a whole bunch of time, most of all, because the people who make the decision are invested in the thing you want to decide on. The political class is not likely to divest itself of the thing that gives it power and authority and stature. Mm-hmm. It's just less likely. And historically, right? It's not just in this moment, oh, I'm an MP, oh, I'm a cabinet minister, oh, I get appointed to A, B, C, D boards, oh, I'm an ambassador and I get to sit over here, oh, I go to get to visit my husband or my brother over there in that country. It's historic. It's my great-grandfather worked for the king when he lived here. Right? Mm-hmm. That, my life is invested in it. I grew up with the queen. That's why I played a song, Some Enchanted Evening, because I wanted to see if I got a response from people. If it resonated, right, that this song that I loved is also the song that the queen loved, because I think that proximity exists here. Mm-hmm. That's why I played that song. But I think that Bahamians are not ready to be a republic because, first of all, we want somebody to make us a republic.
Yes, yes.
That ain't how the thing go.
Yes,
it's obvious.
Very reactive. The conversation is a reactive one.
We haven't invested, in it. The moment that the prime minister said, the moment I read the headline saying the prime minister, he's willing, but it has to go to a referendum. He's willing to take it to a referendum. It's not, how can we be thinking of a republic when our prime minister is still acting like a king?
Yes, Yes.
It ain't your will, it's our will.
And no definite date or anything, just said you're willing to discuss it.
Right, and so I'm glad that the conversations are sort of juxtaposed because we think we could define who we are by telling people who we aren't.
I want to ask you one more question before we leave, and it's a flipping question. Once upon a time, junk new was about the drums. Boom, clack, boom, tick, click, click, boom, back, boom.
Uh-huh.
It's now you hear the horns.
Uh-huh.
You know, the horns determine whether you're having a junk new parade. In fact, you can have a junk new parade without even having the drums.
No, you can't.
No, you can't?
No.
You know?
Yeah, no.
You ever heard?
Clayton Fernando?
You know? The Valley has a anthem where they play the horns. They go, bum, bum, who are we?
Did you say drums? Anglican?
There's no drums.
Isn't the Valley like one of the homes of Anglicanism?
All of this is
I would argue we're changing as a people. But I would argue that the political class is directing the changes, but not intentionally, right? They're in charge. So whatever they do or don't do has a result, right? It produces something. Whether they do something or don't do something, something's going to happen. And I think it's the lack of intentionality. Even looking at these small, tiny spaces, that point you made, like Junkanoo is the horns now.
It's the horns.
That's that resonates as a very high-end thing. It's an upper-class thing.
Aaron, I enjoyed you. Thanks very much for joining me on Guardian Radio in the AM. We shall be back tomorrow. Hey, take care. Bye-bye.